Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today's date is May 11th, 2022. We have three matters on our oral calendar, three matters on our non-oral calendar, for a total of six. We are beginning today at 10:05 a.m., and I'll ask the clerk to call the first case. Before we start, I'll make just a few quick remarks, and then we'll go ahead. And I see counsel at both tables, and I assume you're familiar with our procedures. First of all, welcome back to in-person arguments. We're very happy to have you here in court today. And our procedures remain the same. Slight differences, I guess, in that we have the two podiums, and the clock that you'll be looking at is in the center. Now, if you have any troubles watching the clock, don't worry. I will give you a reminder as you get close to the end of your time, and I assume you are familiar with the time parameters that are given to you today. As far as how you begin your argument, what we ask you to do, we do record today's proceedings and make it available on our website. So if you will identify yourself and the client you represent before you start your remarks, we would very much appreciate that. So with that, we are ready to hear from you, and counsel for appellant, you can begin when you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Patrick B. Steinhoff. I represent the appellant Trygve Svard. He's a resident in a homeowners association. This is a dispute between him and the board of that association respondent. It's an appeal from an order on cross motions for summary judgment in respondent's favor and from a related fee award. There's three categories of issues. The first, I'll just list them real quick. The first is a claim that a architectural control committee application that he submitted is deemed approved under a provision of the association declaration, which is kind of based on a zoning statute, the 1599. It's deemed approved if it's not denied within 45 days. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is whether certain rules and regulations that were adopted by the association board are within the scope of its rulemaking authority as defined by its bylaws. And the third issue is the fee award. And I'd like to start with the fee award just because it's I want to make sure I get to it, and it's pretty straightforward.
Let me ask you this. You referenced that this matter came before the district court on cross motions for summary judgment. So I assume then your position is there are no disputed issues of material fact, since you also sought summary judgment.
That's correct, Your Honor. There are some fact disputes. I think those are obvious from
But not material to the issues before us.
Correct. And I'll get to that when I talk about the voting issue, but first, I'll talk about the fee issue. And there's a fee award in this case. It's a money judgment fee award for attorney fees incurred in this litigation, which is what the respondent asked for in a counterclaim. And the basis for that fee award is a provision of the association bylaws. And there's three problems with that fee award. The first is that it's a money judgment fee award, this provision and this bylaws, even if we assume that it's otherwise enforceable. It says that the association can assess certain costs, including attorney fees, relating to the collection of dues and the enforcement of rules. So just on its face, it doesn't provide for an award of attorney fees in litigation like a fee-shifting statute or contractual provision would. I mean, it's an assessment provision, and that's not what this is.
So I'm not quite following, counsel. If you'd help me out there, what's the difference between an assessment and a money?
Well, in an association, you can assess costs to property, and it's like an administrative proceeding. So if you need to collect dues from a unit owner and the owner doesn't pay, then you can. There's a process for assessing it to the property, and if it's not paid, you can foreclose on the assessment lien.
So that you're arguing that the association should have followed a different process. Assess,
right,
and then
if there's a right to fees in the first place, which I don't think there is, it's not a judge awarding fees like the judge did in this case. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, if you read this provision in the bylaws, it relates to costs associated with collection of dues and enforcement of rules, and this just isn't an enforcement action. It's a action over whether an application is approved or not approved and whether rules are valid or not valid.
Doesn't that kind of beg the question? Isn't it the association enforcing the process they went through? I mean, it seems almost kind of cute to say, well, I got into court first, therefore it can't be an enforcement action. I mean, if you're following, you know, that line of reasoning, they are defending and enforcing the declaration and the bylaws, you know, with respect to their decisions.
I don't think it's cute, Your Honor. I think enforcement means, if he would have installed solar panels on his house and they would have had to bring an action for him to take them down, I think that's enforcement. I don't think a deck action is enforcement. And
so, counsel, I'd like to follow up a bit. You filed a deck action, right?
Correct.
Yeah, and you sought to enjoin, didn't you, the Homeowners Association? And was that just on the rule-making function, or did it have to do with the first issue as well, the deemed approved, if not denied, within 45 days?
It was mainly on the deemed approved. So
aren't you trying to enforce what your interpretation of the Homeowners Association document? So isn't there, you know, I'm struggling with kind of, I wouldn't call it too cute. I just, to me, it's a distinction without a difference.
That's not my position. I don't think it depends on that issue. I don't think this is enforcement, but I think there's other problems with this provision, namely that it doesn't allow for a fee award, period. And also, I don't think there's any contractual or statutory basis for it, and I'll get to that now with your permission.
Okay. So, did you argue in the district court that it was not appropriate to have a judgment, a monetary judgment, rather than an assessment?
Yes, Your Honor, I did. I mean, it's in the briefs, and there was some discussion at the district court level about what they were actually asking for. Was this they asking for a declaratory judgment about the right to assess, or was this a request for a fee award? And if you read the counterclaim, it asked for a fee award, and that's what the judge did. So this was briefed and argued at the district court. So this bylaws provision, it's taken word for word from the Minnesota Common Interest Community Association statute. I might be misstating the name of that statute. This isn't an association organized under that statute. This is a nonprofit corporation. So that particular statutory provision doesn't authorize what's happened here, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. I think respondents in the district court point to a couple decisions of this court, the Chapman Place Association case and the Swanson case, both of which are cited in the briefs. So the Swanson case, Chapman case, they both relate to townhome associations. This is not a townhome association. And the first case, Chapman, says that the Condo Act, in conjunction with declaration and bylaws, govern the rights of the parties. But there is no townhome association statute, so rights for townhomes are governed by the declaration, bylaws, and common law. And then the second case, Swanson, says the operative documents that govern a townhome association constitute a contract between the association and its individual members. And then it cites to Chapman. I don't think that's what Chapman says, so I think this statement in Swanson is a bit overbroad.
So can I ask you a question? It It's your position that your client submitted only one application, correct? I mean, that's what
Your Honor, he thought he was submitting one application. The association treated it as two applications. I don't think it matters. Like, he submitted an application. It was voted on in September of 2019, and he got an email saying it's denied. We have these questions, and it lists three questions. We'll reconsider when you...
And I know your argument is, well, they weren't specific enough in the denial. Right? That's why you're saying it wasn't denied within 45 days.
I think the core of the argument is they didn't vote on it. When he came back in October...
I thought the first time there was a vote.
There was a vote.
And that you're not disputing that.
Okay. So, September 2019, there is a meeting, right? And there's a dispute about whether that was a properly convened meeting and whether they had the authority to act at that meeting. But there's no dispute that there was a vote, and they voted to deny it, and they sent them an email listing three questions, saying information that they wanted, and saying that we'll reconsider when we get this information.
So there was a vote. You're correct. Contesting that there wasn't the five-day notice, but there was a vote, and then there was a communication saying it was denied.
Correct.
And we need more information,
correct.
Right? Okay. And so why doesn't that take care of it?
Because he came back with the information that they asked for at another meeting in October, and they told him at the meeting that we have all the information we need, and then they didn't vote. They just sent him a letter.
Well, what's needed for a vote then? I mean, all three of them agree. So it's not even a majority vote. All three of them agree, and aesthetics is a reason. I mean, the bylaws and the declaration are... I mean, there's sole discretion of the Architectural Control Committee. So I'm having trouble on... Just what is your kind of strongest argument here?
Well,
to help us
Your
out.
Honor, I'll use an analogy, if I may. This is kind of like a privatized city council sitting as a board of adjustment and appeals. And, you know, I've been to, for a very small city, so I've been to city council meetings for small cities, and it would never be an acceptable argument to say that we're denying your application by unspoken consent.
But there's an open meeting law. There's all kinds of other requirements.
That's true.
With your analogy. And here, I could see it if it was actually a meeting of the members and the board made their decision, you know, on something that should have been brought, to a meeting of the membership. But when they get to meet by themselves without anybody else there, I guess I have a little trouble understanding who is harmed and why. I mean, is this kind of, and I know harmless error doesn't apply here, but that's the thought that went through my mind. If it's, you know, is it really form over function and not the situation where it needs to be out in the open so the members can hear what's happening. But I don't see that requirement anyplace.
Your Honor, I think there are requirements, and I'll just list them. I mean, there was a comment in the district court order that my client was ignoring the rules. And I think part of the problem here is there are no rules. But to the extent there are rules, they all apply to respondent. So there's rules, just like there are in a city. I mean, we have ordinances in the city that say that if you act, you gotta act by resolution, by majority vote, at an open meeting. And those are all formalities, and nobody would ever say that, you know, form over whatever.
Well, but we don't have the open meeting piece is all I'm saying here. Go on, because you don't have a lot of time left.
Okay, 1:43, I see. So, rules that weren't followed here. All right, there's supposed to be a separate ACC. There isn't. The board is acting as the ACC until it's formed. Okay. There should be design guidelines. There's no design guidelines. They're supposed to act at a regular meeting or a special meeting. They're not doing that. They're supposed to act by majority vote. And I think that's an important formal requirement. It's not ticky-tack. I mean, it's not a big thing for my client to demand that a body actually vote when it does something important to his property. I don't think that's a minor argument. They're supposed to keep records. They're supposed to keep records of board meetings and committee meetings, et cetera. That didn't happen. And there's like 90% of the disputes in this action we wouldn't be fighting about if there was a record of some of these meetings or even a record that they actually happened. I mean, we have this ridiculous situation where these people ran into each other at Lund's and took some formal, or they took an action on his application, and they don't even remember it. One of them remembers it, the other guy doesn't. That would not be an issue in this litigation if they had followed their bylaws and kept a record of their meetings, which isn't that hard. I mean, you can.
Let me ask you this about the record.
Sure.
I'm looking at the September 20, 2019 email that was sent to your client that asked for the contractor specifications. Did your client ever provide that to the ACC?
No, Your Honor, there are no contractor specifications for solar panels. It's not something that exists. And this is a situation where it'd be super helpful to have a record of a meeting, because he showed up at this October 23rd meeting at the Plymouth Public Library, and it was discussed whether his application was complete or not, whether he had given them everything they asked for in that email. And we have an affidavit from him that says they told him it was complete, and they kind of dispute that in their motion papers, but there's no record, there's no minutes, there's no recording. So there's an affidavit from him that says he submitted all that stuff, and they didn't vote on it. They just sent them a letter after they allegedly talked about it at Lund's without voting, and I don't think that's good enough. I think it's deemed approved under the declaration, and I'm out of time.
Yeah. Thank you, counsel. I appreciate that, and it's you do, of course, have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose. With that, we are ready to hear from counsel for respondent.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel. I think the, and I'm going to go in order from the brief.
So, counsel, I'll just ask you to quickly identify yourself and your client
for
the record. No, that's
James
fine.
James Magnuson here on behalf of Camelot 9 Encore.
Thank you.
I'm going to simply go in order with, first of all, the ACC action, the Architectural Control Committee action. I think, as Your Honors have identified, it's clear that there was a formal meeting vote and that that vote was stated in writing to the appellant. Your application has been denied.
And what are you referring to now, the September 20th, 2019 letter?
Absolutely, Your Honor. And there was a reference to certain formalities that were not followed. I would like to quickly address that, Your Honors. These formalities did not apply to the ACC. They applied to board actions. The board was empowered under the governing documents to set up ways that the ACC would meet and decide on what would go forward on their decisions, but those had not been put in place. The board had only existed for a few months. This was their first architectural change application that they had ever reviewed. There were not formal requirements in place. However, even if this were to go forward as a board action, it was again constituted by the members of the board, the ACC was, even if it were to go forward as a board action, the board had the right under the governing documents to waive notice. All of the members of the board have been unanimous throughout this process in waiving notice, not only by showing up to the meeting, but also waiving it in writing specifically afterwards. So again, Your Honor, this first denial in September, we think is sufficient. Because the denial gives specific grounds, requests contractor specifications, and says we will reconsider when we receive these materials. There's no dispute that those materials were never provided to...
But hold on a second. Yes. The representatives of your clients treated it as a second application. I mean, I don't know how you can dispute that. Well, and then it seems to me that there's a fact issue, because in the record there's three different versions of how was there a meeting in Lund's? I mean, Ms. Is it Ammon or something?
Amdahl, Your Honor.
Amdahl, thank you. She says in one affidavit that the other board members met, and then she says in a second affidavit that they all met, and then you've got Mr. Novak in his deposition saying, no, there was no meeting, and then you've got his supplemental affidavit saying, oh, the other board members met. So why is that not a material issue, you know, a genuine issue of material fact?
Well, Your Honor, we haven't disputed that there is a disputed fact there. There is a difference of recollection as to whether they met at lunch. The question is whether that fact is material, Your Honor, and we do not believe that it is.
Go ahead.
Number one, we don't believe a second meeting and formal vote was necessary. A second application was never provided. Now, as to how we treated it, there's no question, Your Honor, that my client, acting as the ACC, did attempt to give appellant as much time as possible to produce these materials. And so they did allow this to go on, and frankly, probably from the goodness of their heart, it led to this process continuing on through multiple meetings together with the appellant and multiple productions of various documents. But again, there's no dispute that he never provided an actual contract or specifications.
But he says no such thing exists.
Well, and that is correct because he never obtained them. And in fact, appellant testified in his deposition that he could have obtained specifications, professional drawings, that would demonstrate. Again, what appellant did was he did hand-drawn sort of put together.
No, but he provided mechanicals. I mean, he's actually an engineer, I read in his deposition. And, you know, with that second meeting at the library, he provided pretty detailed information.
Well, he provided pretty detailed information, but he never provided professional plans, which would show, for example, dimensions, which would show how
they were secured to the roof. I thought he included dimensions. He included the clamps and how they were going to be secured.
Well, he photoshopped images.
No, he included in writing what was going to be used, how it was going to be attached to the rafters and where, and the spacing and the size, what you could see.
Well, he testified that.
So what is it actually that they wanted, or were they just going to deny it on aesthetics? And he also, there's an affidavit where the appellant says, I was told they got everything. So why is that then not a material fact issue?
Well, the fact issue as to whether they got anything, and Your Honor, of course, we dispute that again, but we, again, don't think that's a material fact. Again, we believe that the initial disapproval is all that was necessary. But on the additional information that he provided, again, what we needed were professional drawings. There's not a single professional drawing in the record that actually shows dimensions. He admitted that he did, quote, the best that he could do on this sort of drawing. He photoshopped photos from the internet onto a house that wasn't even his plan. It was his neighbor's plan. He hand-drew some of these things in. He tried to give information, but he tried to do so without spending the money to have an actual engineered drawing that would demonstrate some of the information necessary to my client. Now, one more thing on the vote thing. I think this is very important as well to note. The documents, the governing documents, state that you may only build on the house in one of two situations. Either the application is approved, there's no dispute that it wasn't approved, or whether it is deemed to be approved by non-response within the 45 days. Your Honor, we believe that there was response, and then there were clear response with the two letters thereafter. Even if there wasn't a second application and it was even without a formal second application, but this additional information provided constituted an informal second application. We would argue that the fact that the board, there's no dispute that the board spoke about, reviewed, and agreed to send these two letters, which gave very specific grounds for the disapproval, that that was sufficient as a vote. Again, the requirements related to board actions did not apply under the governing documents to the ACC, and no formal procedures had been put in place for how the ACC was to conduct meetings, how to discuss these things, and how to arrive at a vote. I think it's very important to remember every single one of these actions was unanimous, and the board members who constitute the ACC have been unanimous the entire time. Moving on quickly, and on the rules, I'll simply say it wasn't covered today. In the briefs, I think it's fairly quickly and simply set forward our position, which is broad discretion for the board to be able to do rules and regulations.
Okay, but can I ask you a question about that? Because in reading through the bylaws, so there is a prohibition now on solicitation and is it personal surveys or something? But the bylaws, I noticed, allow members to demand a special meeting if there's a request from 10% of the members. So how does a member go about getting, I mean, isn't that inconsistent with rights in the bylaws then? Why should we say this is fine?
Well, Your Honor, two things quickly on that. Number one, as was testified by the board member during his deposition, the chairman of the board, this rule was meant to stop the behavior specifically they were receiving complaints.
That's not what it says, though. It's a pretty broad prohibition that seems to restrict members from exercising rights they have in the bylaws.
And Your Honor, but what we're saying is that solicitation and surveys is different than discussion. This was talking about going to people's houses with formal proceeding, written documents trying to harass them into signing them. And so that was what is being banned. I understand that there could be a different interpretation, but that's not an interpretation that the board adopts or that the board has ever enforced.
But you don't have any record of that, though. I mean, you're just talking now.
Yeah,
okay.
And I would say as well, I think it's very important to note as well on the rules and regulations that if there are issues with the rules and regulations, there are many, many procedures within the association for dealing with them. There are ways to deal with them through a special meeting. There are ways to deal with them by getting on the board or on the rulemaking committees. There are various ways to deal with them that don't involve litigation. And I think that's what brings us to the attorney fee provision. The attorney fee provision was specifically put in place to try to relieve other homeowners association members of the burden of dealing with litigious fellow members.
But it seems like you skipped a step here, because the provision, and as I read it in Article 6, Section 2, provides for seeking an assessment against a lot, not obtaining a monetary judgment in a declaratory judgment action. How do you justify what the district court did here based on the, according to both parties, unambiguous language?
Well, Your Honor, and I will forthrightly say, in our counterclaim, we asked for a declaratory judgment related to the assessment. However, we believe, and this is our position, that the district court still has power to provide an attorney fee award
Based on what, though?
Under a contract.
Well, yeah, but the language of the contract says that the association has the right to assess. And so we treat contracts like we interpret statutes, and we interpret them as written if there's plain language. And I assume you're not saying it's ambiguous, that provision.
No, Your Honor. No, Your Honor.
Then there is no general authority. I mean, well, tell me if there is. I shouldn't ask. Well, I mean, it's your chance to tell us and to convince us.
Yes, Your Honor. again, the relief we asked for and the relief we're granted, I will acknowledge are different. They're different. Now, I will say, though, Your Honor, it's my position that this is a distinction without a difference, that the assessment operates in relation to appellant's home and appellant's rights the same as a judgment. It operates as a lien on his house that may be foreclosed.
You can garnish. You can garnish wages and stuff. Okay, go on. Yep.
However, that was our perspective on it. As far as the actual amount of attorney's fees and the power of the association to obtain attorney's fees, again, Your Honor, we believe that the case law is fairly clear. It is a contract. These governing documents are a contract. They are in a contract that govern appellant and the association, and that therefore there is the possibility of a fee, of attorney's fees being flowing from appellant to the association. The one thing I would say, again, this was covered to some extent, but it's very important to say that the governing documents do not say an enforcement action. They say in connection with enforcement of the governing documents.
And what portions of the governing documents was your client enforcing in this case?
Well, in connection with enforcement, again, Your Honor. And so we believe that this is in connection with enforcement of the procedures of the ACC and the board's rulemaking authority. We believe that it is, in fact, a distinction without a difference to say that there's some sort of difference in terms of attorney's fees between us putting a rule into place and then enforcing it against you, or us putting a rule into place and then you immediately going into court for an injunction against us being able to enforce it against you. That is all in connection with an enforcement. And again,
the rulemaking took place after the decision denying the application here, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but the rulemaking is also being challenged because those two rules are being challenged. So and one thing I would note as well, I believe that the district court, when talking about rules in the association's rules in the order, often was talking about them in kind of a general sense, not in specifically the rules and regulations, but to include the declaration and bylaws. And so finally, Your Honor, based on all of these things, we believe that the district court was absolutely correct and the decision should be upheld. So if there's no further questions, that's all I've got, Your Honors. Thank you.
Thank you, Counsel.
Your Honor, I'll just go. I have a few responsive comments to some of Mr. Magnuson's arguments, and I'll just go in the order that he argued. So there's an argument that the board doesn't have to follow the bylaws that pertain to the board when it's acting as the ACC. It doesn't actually say that anywhere. So I see no reason why the board isn't bound by its bylaws to act at regular meetings or special meetings, even when it's acting as the ACC.
But there's nothing in Section 8 that governs the conduct of the ACC that
there is a requirement that it act by majority vote. So there's no ACC-specific arguments about you have to act at regular meetings or duly called meetings. Those only apply to the board, but there is a provision, I think it's 8.2 or 8.3 of the declaration that says it has to act by majority vote. Going back to your question, Judge Bjorkman, about fact issues. So I think the reason there isn't fact issues here, there's two potential fact issue. One is, did the board tell Mr. Svard, your application is complete, we have everything we need? He said they did in an affidavit. There's no responsive affidavit that rebuts that in the record. There's an argument that what he actually provided wasn't a contractor's specification, but there's no dispute that they told him that. Number two, there's a potential dispute about whether there was a vote at this this Lunds meeting or encounter. And if the court concludes that the board needed to vote, there's nothing in the record that says they voted. So any of these supplemental affidavits, you can read them 100 times, and they don't actually say that there was a vote. So if the court concludes that there had to have been a vote, notwithstanding all the factual disputes about whether the meeting happened or not, they don't actually claim to have voted. So there's no dispute as to that. On the fee issue, I cited a couple cases in my argument that related to townhome associations, and I think the theme of those cases was there's no townhome association statute, so we have to look at bylaws and declaration and the common law. We do have a statute here. It's the nonprofit corporation statute. This is a nonprofit corporation, so if the respondent thinks there's a right to fees or to assess fees or to have a fee award, there is a statute to look at. It's the nonprofit corporation statute. So what the respondent should be telling the court is some provision of the nonprofit corporation statute that allows for this, or some case interpreting that statute that says that a nonprofit corporation bylaw by itself is a binding contract. And I see no obvious reason why a corporate bylaw would automatically be an enforceable contract. I mean, it could be if there's some kind of consent.
But nonprofits enter into contracts all the time, don't they? I mean, my guess is that respondent hires someone to do landscaping. Is that not binding?
Well, no,
binding?
Your Honor, I think their argument is there's a provision in this bylaw. And that provision...
But how do you respond to the fact that the declaration, which runs with the land, incorporates the bylaws? And then if you could respond for a minute to, and I'm not sure I agree that this is what they did in their counterclaim, but if we were to agree that the only way that the association could obtain attorney's fees is through an assessment, then did the district court have jurisdiction to say this is an appropriate occasion for the board to do that, for the association to do that? This litigation was in connection with enforcement as a declaratory judgment.
If that's all it was, I think so, Your Honor. You can read the counterclaim. It doesn't ask for a declaratory judgment.
No, I just looked at it.
And, I mean, they asked for a fee award. They got a fee award. If there was a deck action that said this is enforceable, maybe that would be okay. But I don't think adjudicating the amount of the fees or, I mean, it goes a lot farther than an enforceability deck action would. And as you noted, that's not actually what the pleadings say. So I'm out of time again. Thank you for your time, and I'll yield.
Thank you, counsel. Thanks to both counsel today. We very much appreciate hearing from you and receiving your briefs and arguments. The matter is now submitted to this court for its decision, and we will issue a decision within the statutory time frame. So thank you.